Hello, welcome to Mosaics, a podcast of the Idaho Office for Refugees. I'm your host, Holly Beach, and today we are joined by Amy Pence Brown. Amy is the new executive director of Artisans for Hope, which is a really beautiful, colorful, innovative organization in the Boise community. So I'm really excited to get to talk with Amy about that. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, I was really excited to see on Instagram that you are in this new role. Can you share a little bit about what led you to work in this space?
Yes. So I this summer on Instagram, also Artisans for Hope, who I follow, posted that they were looking for a part-time person to work in the store and be sort of an assistant to the executive director at the time. And I do a lot of work in the community as a community activist and community organizer. I'm an artist myself. I work in fiber arts and uplifting other artists as the owner of Wintry Market and our Wintry Market indie art and craft family of markets. I also do that, amongst other things in town. But it is the mission of Artisans for Hope is like near and dear to my heart. My expertise in working with nonprofits and arts organizations and fabric in particular, and also working with some of the more vulnerable people in our community, just felt like the perfect fit for me. So I applied for the job, and right away the executive director at the time, Fran, said, "You're way overqualified for this." And in fact, I am about to retire at the end of this year, at the end of 2025, and I think you'd be a perfect executive director. And I said, "Oh wow, that is a huge honor, and that's very exciting. And let's, can I take this, you know, assistant job first for a few months? That'll be great, sort of training and learning about this organization, and step into that role at the beginning of 2026." And so I did both of those things. So I've been there, let's see, almost 5 months now, I guess.
That's great.
Or well, 4 months, yes.
I feel like I jumped the gun a little bit, assuming that everyone knew what Artisans for Hope was, because I love them. So if anyone doesn't know, can you share what does Artisans for Hope do?
Yes. Artisans for Hope started in 2009 with this group of women. I think there were eight or nine of them who lived in Boise, and we're in a book club together, and we had become, Boise had become a significant, you know, resettlement community for refugees from other countries around that same time. One of the 200 resettlement communities in the U.S., as far as I understand it. And they wanted to do something to help welcome these new people to Boise and create community with them and help integrate them into our larger culture. And they also, all of these women, not only were they avid readers in this book club, but they also were all makers and worked in handicrafts like knitting and sewing and quilting. And so they brainstormed this idea to use knitting and handwork to invite refugees in to work together with their hands. So they started with knitting, and it turned out to be such a lovely community for both the volunteer instructors and the refugees, mostly women, but not always. We have all genders and ages of refugees that come and work at Artisans for Hope. We grew and grew and grew. It became wildly popular. We started teaching beginning courses, like beginning sewing instruction, and they would graduate, and they still do that 16 years later, and they get their own sewing machine to take home, and we have borrowed spaces and been in people's, you know, office buildings and rented spaces and grown as a little nonprofit over the past decade and a half. And our graduates from our beginning courses can go on to become advanced sewists, and they make all sorts of beautiful things for sale in our shop that is attached to our studio. And the artisans, as we call them, our refugee expert makers, can earn 60% commission off of all of their sales. So it's a nice way for them to gather together and create and learn and connect and earn. And that is, in fact, part of our motto.
Yeah, that's so cool to create community that way. I, at the time of recording, we're in the middle of this like crazy long inversion. It's so gray outside. I really miss the sun and blue sky. And I stopped into Artisans for Hope the other day, and it was just like a burst of color and warmth and this like joy and so well organized. And it was really inspiring just to be in that space with, and people weren't working at the time, but you could see the studio with all the sewing machines or where people can cut fabric. It reminded me of being in my grandma's sewing loft when I was a kid. And I would just look through all her beautiful fabrics, and she had all her stuff set up and would make really amazing things. And I can only imagine relocating somewhere strange to you, unfamiliar, and having a space like that to not only go connect with people, but to get to work with your hands, get to sell what you're working on. I think it's a very cool way to build community.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned the physical feeling of the space. And that's one of the things that drew me to the organization also, was that the sewing studio and the knitting classes and the fabric storage and, you know, the way the organization of the zippers and the elastic and the lace and the rickrack, you know, the buttons.
The buttons are impressive.
So cool. And also the store, you know, and our offices are all in the same tiny little historic building, the arcade building. And I think that really does add to the beauty of it when people come in shopping or donating things or just wandering in off the street because they see our sign and they wonder what Artisans for Hope even means. We give them a tour, we show them around, and it's such a joy to be able to see like the place where things are made, you know, what they're made from, all laid out in front of you. And then also the people who are making it are right there, you know, right next door to the store where you can buy the things. And that's so rare and unique in our sort of mass consumer culture society, I think.
Yeah, it is really cool when you have that extra connection. There's a downtown place in Boise, like Idaho Made, I think it's called. And I went there and bought a vase for my mom. And as I'm checking out, the person checking me out was like, oh, I made this vase. Here's what inspired me. And I was like, really? That was really cool. And then even at Artisans for Hope, when I visited, the artists weren't there, but I bought a couple of bags for my friends. And on the tag, it was very cool. Her name was on there and what country she came from. So you could just kind of feel that little bit of connection with somebody and enjoy their art, the artistic expression that they had. So I thought that was a really special pick-me-up at a time when I think we really need some community. I mean, it's not just the weather that's gray right now. Like, this is a heavy time for people, especially in the immigration space. Like, there's fear and there's disconnection, and it's just community and continuing to work with joy and create, I think, is really going to get us through some hard times.
Yeah, I think Artisans for Hope from the beginning was founded on this premise of joy. And there's a lot of resistance and reclamation in joy, really, you know, when you think about it from a lot of perspectives, but also not only art, but marginalized people, you know, and all of those things combined together make it a pretty special place. And the refugees from the beginning and the volunteer instructors and everyone who volunteers with us, because the whole organization, I didn't mention this before, for the most part is volunteer driven, and the volunteers are the heart of our organization. We have over 50 volunteer instructors that teach the knitting and sewing and do the fabric sorting and all of that. We have three very, very part-time positions. One is mine as the executive director, that are paid minimally because we're, you know, a nonprofit that runs on very little money. But from the beginning, the people have come in to the space to use their hands and make something beautiful together. And while we may have language barriers and, you know, totally come from different cultures and different backgrounds and have different histories for sure, It is one thing that we find in common, and we can use our hands to communicate so much with each other. And that's been a really beautiful thing. You know, we do teach by default some basic English language skills, you know, mostly surrounding like needle, thread, scissors, you know, words that we're using to make. But so much can be said through just our demeanor and our hands and our feelings. And everyone, the refugees, the volunteers, the staff, myself, come in there with so much gratitude and joy to be there, surrounded by doing something, you know, by beautiful things, like you mentioned, and beautiful fabric and objects, but also making something beautiful and having, it is sort of a way to escape in some ways the other parts of your life, the other heavy things that may be going on, especially in our refugees' lives, but in all of our lives, really, here in America right now, for just a few hours, right? We come in there, we're focusing on something else, and there's something so meditative and helpful in making things with your hands. You know, that's been proven over and over by all sorts of medical professionals and mental health professionals also. And it's so true.
I'm curious to hear about your community. Like how many, you call them sewists? Is that the right term?
Yes.
How many sewists do you have? Is that sewing studio like usually packed at a certain time, or do they kind of come in one by one and work on what they're working on kind of thing?
We currently probably have in our both our advanced sewing and our beginning sewing groups probably about 75 refugee students or artisans. 50 of them are beginner sewists, so we do have a schedule, so that does help keep the number of people at bay, because it is a small space, like you mentioned. So on certain days we have beginning sewing classes, and then certain days we have advanced sewist classes, and so we have about 50 beginner sewists, and then about 25 that are advanced, and they are the ones that make things that they sell in the store.
Okay.
They're also welcome to come and make things for themselves or their families or friends or their community. Many of them graduate from our beginning class and then use their skills to have home tailoring businesses or get paid to make things from other people. Because we also give them their own sewing machine. I think I mentioned that.
When they graduate.
Get to keep, yeah.
So cool.
When they graduate, so they get to take that home.
So do people in the community just, like, they'll donate an old sewing machine to you? Because you showed me a section of the shop where, like, you can fix up the sewing machines to go. So people donate it, and then you fix it up, and it's ready to go?
One of my other favorite parts about Artisans for Hope that I think maybe not a lot of people know about is that we operate almost entirely on donations, both financial money, like hard cash donations, and some grants, but the donation of products. So every bit, almost, I would say, literally like 95% of every piece of fabric, zippers, the buttons, the thread, the yarn that the knitters use is all donated by the community. So, you know, existing in our world is a lot of unused fabric and notions that need to be reused. And so that portion of that sustainability model has been with us since the beginning. And that was a brilliant thing to factor in by the four mothers before me who created Artisans for Hope. So including the sewing machines. So all of the sewing machines that the artisans get are donated by the community. And that's lovely also. So everything is donated. Everything is reused. Things we can't use because we get all sorts of donations of art supplies or other craft materials that we don't necessarily use. We donate to other arts organizations, other refugee organizations, other nonprofits that work in the same sort of realm that we do. And that adds a really important component, I think, to Artisans for Hope.
Yeah, that sustainability piece. It is. I feel guilty sometimes when I have like jeans that are not good enough to donate. I'm like, I just throw them away. I don't know what else to do. So I don't know if you guys use jeans in your crafts, probably not, but it's cool to think that there's zippers being reused and buttons and everything.
We do use jeans, actually. And okay. A lot of people, I don't know about a lot of people, but it's nice to see there's sort of a resurgence in the art of mending and repair and handcrafts in general, especially in Boise. There are several, you know, organizations popping up that are reuse type markets that are teaching other classes to people on how to, how to do basic sewing skills, how to embroider, how to knit, how to felt things, how to weave, all sorts of these things are becoming, they've never not been popular, but, they kind of ebb
and
flow.
They're kind of rising back up.
But I think that our need for using our hands and creating is becoming greater and greater.
I agree too. And this is just one example of this, of going back to maybe a more analog time of life. My 17-year-old niece asked for and got a really pretty CD player for Christmas. And I was like, what is happening right now? And she got new CDs and she was so excited. And I'm like, okay, I'm officially old enough to be like, my childhood is retro now. But it's just cool to see this desire to get back to more physical being in the world.
Yeah, I think so. I think it really grounds us as humans. It also, in a world where we're increasingly digital or everything's, sort of online, either on our phone or a computer or AirPods or, whatever it is, this actual task of using our hands and our brain in a different way completely, rewires us, at least for those moments.
I'd love to hear more in your 5 months working at Artisans for Hope. What has stuck out to you or meant a lot to you about the community that you're working with there?
Oh my gosh, there's so many things. I come home every day with full, my heart is so full. And everyone who comes into that place, new staff, new volunteers, new students, talk about this feeling of literal joy when you walk in the door of that place, how it's tangible. And you mentioned that a little bit with your experience just coming to shop, and shoppers will say that too. There's something about that place that just really fills you up. And I think it is the open-heartedness of everyone who's there, from the refugees who are just open to making friends with other refugees from around the world. They have language barriers, with each other too. Some of them don't. They just met, but they realize they're from the same place. One speaks better English than the other, so they'll translate for each other. They'll make friends across borders, but across age groups, across life experiences. And that doesn't even include those of us who are, maybe native to Boise or native to Idaho, who get to volunteer and mix and become friends with these people. And not just friends, I will say it really is like a family. Mm. And that is something that I recognized right away when I walked in, that I was becoming part of a family. Our volunteers get to know these refugee artisans really well. They know lots of things about them. They end up in their homes for dinner. They end up giving them rides to doctor's appointments. We end up helping them set up vision screening. We end up, texting each other about when somebody ends up in the hospital or somebody's ill. We do have a variety of ages. I will say a lot of our volunteers in particular are 70 and up. So life throws at you all sorts of things that change with your body and your health. I have learned so much. I just turned 50 when I started Artisans for Hope, and I'm one of the younger ones, I will say. And so I am learning so much just across generations about things to come, things that people are dealing with in their lives. The artisans, when they share things about their families, when they share their food, which is one of my favorite parts. We do a lot of sharing of food.
That's great.
We have our graduations. I mentioned we have a little graduation ceremony when somebody graduates from the beginner sewing course, and they get not only their own sewing machine to take home, they get a certificate that we sign. They get a bag of supplies, sewing supplies that we gift them, of really nice sewing supplies, and a bag that says Artisans on it. They show us all their projects. We do a little ceremony, and often they bring food for celebration, and we turn the ironing board. We put a tablecloth on the ironing board. We turn the iron off. They lay out all of this food from their home country in celebration, or our teachers will bake cookies. It's kind of like a buffet. And that has been amazing. They bring us gifts. They're traveling from all over the world, and they'll bring us back food or all sorts of gifts from their homes. They'll make things and bring them to me as gifts. And vice versa. I do the same for them. Things that I know that they like. Our volunteer instructors definitely do the same. We had a holiday potluck recently in which was like a smorgasbord of international cuisine. And it was amazing. And our volunteers, too, they come from all over the world and the country. You know, so a lot of them are not native Idahoans, but ended up here. And so that is something I've learned. I mean, I have already loved international cuisine, but I get to learn and eat so many things. It's such a joy to walk into and hear all of these languages. Like, you know, we have a lot of artisans from Afghanistan right now, Bhutan, Congo. So the languages, I mean, there's like five different languages at any moment being spoke. And I think it's so beautiful. You know, you can just feel it.
Yeah.
Reverberating throughout our tiny little space.
I like that about my workplace too. Like, you can hear different languages, and then whenever we have a potluck, you get to experience something new, like from Ukraine or Iraq, or, you know, just the generosity of people to share in that, and then the joy of getting to experience that is really special. We did invite an artisan or somebody that in the Artisans for Hope community from a refugee background to come on and share as well. The door is always open. I know the scheduling today didn't quite work out, but the door is always open to hear from them about what it was like, you know, to be able to join that kind of community in a new place. And I'm curious, too, do the ones who graduate ever go on to become teachers?
Yes, that's a great question. They do. Okay. Some of them just naturally fall into that role when they're in the beginner course, and our instructors will recognize that and say, you would be a great teacher. You have been so helpful. Do you want to come on and be an instructor after? And several of them have said yes.
That's so cool.
For sure. And most of them come with no sewing skills. We do have some, of course, like all of our refugees here, that come extremely skilled in a variety of areas that they aren't, you know, able to utilize as well in America as they did in their home country, including some people who were already tailors or, you know, owned their own sewing business or sewing company in other countries.
Yeah, I think of Veronique, your colleague there, and her daughter, Tara Rita. We have an episode, a Mosaics episode with her. So if you want to learn more about Tara and Veronique, it's a really beautiful conversation. But she had, her own business, right? Studied in Switzerland, I think. Just a powerhouse in that world. And then life changes and you find yourself resettling in a completely different place. I'm just proud to see what she's done after disappointment and loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Veronique makes beautiful bags for us, by the way. If you want to come in and see the things that she makes, they're very high quality. They're very sought after. We sell a lot of them, and they're very lovely. And then she also does work for us part-time, too, and does quality control, so sort of checks.
Make sure those zippers are zipping.
Yeah, exactly. And I know a lot of our artisans are traveling right now. Some of them don't speak very good English, so they were, you know, hesitant to come on and the podcast and talk. They feel nervous about it. And totally they fun. Are a little more nervous these days, I think, in general, to you know, speak out or, you know,
be in a
public platform or setting like that.
That's definitely very real right now. And I feel sad that people have expressed to me too the joy of being welcomed into a new home and a new community, and then the second guessing that comes when things turn the way they're turning right now. And so I understand, and I want people to be safe and have their privacy and feel comfortable. That's always the top priority, and just know that we are so grateful that they're part of our community and we're part of their community. It's really a mutual gift.
For sure. And Artisans for Hope is like the epitome of that, right? Like I just feel like every day we are all saying to each other, like, thank you. So many times a day when we walk in the door and when we leave to each other, just thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your talents and your time and your skills and in such a lovely, needed way.
And other places have taken note. You mentioned, like, around the country, that has there been interest in the model of Artisans for Hope?
Yes, yeah. And I think really since our early days, since our inception, it's such a unique model that other people are constantly asking us about it. Now, with the world being more digital, of course, people can hear about us or follow us on social media from other places. So many of our volunteer instructors and our shoppers are either visiting from other places or transplants themselves from other cities that are, you know, just like, no, I don't know any, you know, they'll come from big cities around the U.S., and we don't have anything like this. I don't know of any, you know, model like this where refugee artisans are able to take these kinds of classes taught by people in the community, and definitely not for free, right? Like that they get all of this for free. And I do think that our really like grassroots, scrappy sustainability model from the beginning has really allowed us to be pretty self-sufficient that way. And we are really creative, and that's also the beauty of being scrappy and you know, sustainable like that and using found things, right? A lot of our projects and a lot of what we make comes from the inspiration out of a garbage sack that was just dumped in our hallway full of doll parts. And suddenly we're like, we're going to make dolls. You know, like we have these amazing instructors that are just so creative and so skilled that they're like, we can make something with this, you know, like, let's do it. And
I just pictured like a Barbie doll head sewed onto the top of a bag.
No, we have, we have literal dolls. Like we have some beautiful dolls, some like stuffed animals, stuffies.
Oh, I have seen those little stuffed animals.
Yeah.
Like there were tiny sheep.
Yeah. There's some crocheted sheep that are really darling. And so I do think that part of it has makes it such a unique business model. You know, it doesn't cost a lot to run it. We also so people are really drawn to that part of it, and just the beautiful community that we have forged there, and the ability for these refugee artisans to not only learn a skill and make friends that we later become family and make a little money also, you know, while they're doing it, and have a place to come that's really like a community center in a lot of ways. Once a week, a couple times a week. And then have the store, you know, that sells things. And we go out and do markets too. We have booths at a lot of markets around the area. Some wholesale accounts, and we're looking for more. So if any business owners are out there listening that want to sell, you know, a few things from Artisans for Hope in your shop, people love to buy from us. It feels pretty good. I have to say everyone in my life got holiday gifts from Artisans for Hope, but I do love, like you mentioned, the tag tells you exactly who made it and what country they're from. You know that 60% of your money that you're spending goes directly back to that artisan, the other 40% goes to sustain this really important organization and mission.
So just before we wrap up, I'm curious if you have any final words for us.
We would love for you, if you're hearing this and you're in the area, please come by. We love to give tours of our space. We love to show people around and show you what we make. You can follow us too on Facebook and Instagram. We post all sorts of fun stuff on there, and products and behind the scenes, you know, footage on there. Also, our website is another great place to find out more about us and how you can help. A lot of people want to help. If you are a sewist that has skills and has time, I mentioned that most of them are retired because that's when people have more time to give. But you don't have to be retired and you don't have to give a lot of time. So we have a variety of things, and you don't have to be a skilled sewist to volunteer either. We have other opportunities. If you do have, you know, a fabric stash or a bunch of like your grandma's buttons that you've been hoarding forever that you're not going to use or anything like that, you can drop them off anytime. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 1. We have like Amazon wish list for some items online. We have other ways you can like, we can be your organization of choice at Fred Meyer on your Fred Meyer, you know, rewards card when you shop there to get donations.
Yeah.
We have like Venmo and PayPal for just $10 donations or more than that, you know, anything like that. There's a variety of ways you can help. Literally just like liking our posts on social media or sharing them in your Instagram stories is so helpful to get the word out. And definitely anything you buy from us is made with so much love and such important, not only history, but important work moving into our future. So I'm so glad to be here talking. Yeah. Yes, I love talking about Artisans for Hope. I could do it all day, but we have, you know, half an hour.
Yeah. Well, it's really great to connect with you and get to know you better. Thank you for what you're doing. And I'm going to have to try to sneakily find out what time this next potluck at Artisans for Hope is happening so I could come shopping accidentally during that time. But we appreciate you. And, yeah, anyone that's around that wants gifts or inspiration, check it out. So thanks, Amy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining the conversation. For more information on how to be involved with refugee resettlement, please visit idahorefugees.org. Mosaics is produced by the Idaho Office for Refugees with grant support from the MJ Murdoch Charitable Trust. Music by the Afrosonics. Production in partnership with SB Studios.